Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You don't normally hear those pieces of audio consecutively, but I thought it was appropriate. Joining me after sounding attention is Chris Woodbridge. He's the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette. He's also, little known fact, the publisher of Leatherneck magazine. Woody, what's going on, man? Good to see you last week.
Yeah, good to see you as well, Mac. Always good to get back out to Camp Pendleton, 29 Palms, and kind of the home of my operational forces time in the Marine Corps.
There you go. Back to your old stomping grounds. What was the highlight of the trip other than getting to hang out with me?
Well, that's a high bar.
Thank you. I thought I'd save you from that because that's the kind of guy that I am.
Well, I'll tell you, on the front end of the trip, before all the various activities at Camp Pendleton, I was up in 29 Palms, so drove up the hill and got to pay a visit to Marine Corps Tactics Operations Group and talk to the student in the Operation Tactics Instructor course about professional development and professional reading, writing, and you know some opportunities for them to take back to their home station. And that was worthwhile. And also talked to Roomful Lieutenant at the Basic Communications Officers course as well. Out there, and they remembered me from when I spoke to them at the base of school here at Quantico, and were a little surprised to see me that far from home. Little do they know how much time I actually have in 29 Palms.
So, what was your message to the Marines in the basic communicator course?
So for them, you know, they're going to be in about 3 or 4 months. They'll graduate and be checking into, you know, battalion, squadron level organizations, and they're going to be the new, you know, the junior officer in those outfits. And you know, chances are that when the commanding officer, you know, has an initiative related to PME, battlefield studies, professional reading, writing program that. Well, you know, who's going to wind up being tasked with that? Who's the stuckee? More than likely, it's the junior officer joining the outfit. And so, the message is that reaching back to their professional association, to the MCANF should be their first reaction when they've been tasked with a project like that.
Ah, that's sage advice. Hey, I can help keep your bacon out of the fire, boys and girls.
That's exactly right. We can provide you all the information and guidance that you need, and we provide you know material resources too, logistic support. We'll give you money to put a library together, that sort of thing.
Wow, that's nice. That's nice. Well, that's a good trip then. I mean, getting that message out, you can make I can make you look good. That's never a bad message.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right. Let's see. What's in the news that I want to talk about? I want to do the opinion section of this, and I'm going to put you kind of on the hot. I'm going to put you on the hot seat, okay? With two topics that are kind of in the news. Kind of interesting relative to the Navy special. Navy had its own little the Naval Institute West 2019 convention.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So Paul Soldra, who we all know from Duffel Blog, and now he's over at Task and Purpose, but he asked what the SEALs were doing, right, to Rear Admiral Colin Green, who's now the head of Special Warfare Group, blah, 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 blah. What are the SEALs doing, essentially, to clean their act up? The moderator, retired Vice Admiral James Zortman, tried to jump in front of the question and derail it, but Admiral Green said, no, I want to answer it. I'm curious about your thoughts. The Special Force community has been ridden hard and put away wet for going on 17 years. They expanded at a rate probably never anticipated. And as a result, we're seeing things that are, I would say, disappointing if they were applied to any unit. And the frequency that we're seeing them applied in the special forces community, the murder cases, right, the one in Africa where you have allegedly two SEALs and two Mars Marine Raiders involved in the murder of an Army staff sergeant who found out they were taking money, blah, 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 blah. I'm curious about your thoughts in a general way about our special forces community and the ethical issues that seem to be plaguing them right now.
I would say your statement that this sort of behavior is unacceptable, shocking in any unit is absolutely true. The fact that it's special operators really works against them in terms of the visibility and the media attention that it gets. It's a sad statement that when particularly special operators, but you could extend this to the Marine Corps and really any other service. When everybody is doing the right thing and winning and doing the exceptional service to this country, that's page four underneath the fold.
Right.
Business as usual. Dog bites man. No news story there. But when any one of these military organizations, especially a highly trained, selective, and eminently capable unit, does something either ethically wrong or fails in a mission, that's front page New York Times, dog bites man. Everybody wants to hear about that, and invariably these stories can very often grow legs. Part of the reason I think is probably, as you pointed out, there is an exceptional demand and growth in the community, maybe sort of an unmanaged growth. But I think what's really a potential solution here, and what is another driving factor, is the overuse. It's the security blanket mentality. You know, I gotta have my security blanket, as a national security decision maker. And there's a lot of security blanket in using special operations forces because of their precision, their predictability, and their high degree of success. So a degree of overuse has grown over the last, 15 to 20 years. And I know that managing that in part means shifting some of those missions to the services, and by that I would say what is often referred to as general purpose forces,
right.
Assuming more of those heretofore special operations only missions. The fact of the matter is they have largely become the force of choice for not just their entire family of historical missions, but particularly for direct action missions.
Right.
To the point where other forces, Marine Expeditionary Forces, Army Forward Deployed Forces, etc., are being excluded from those missions, despite the fact that they have the capabilities, perhaps not in the comfort zone of again some senior decision makers. So I know for a fact that within DOD and within the what is called the Special Operations Low Intensity Conflict part of DOD, there's a push towards trying to not limit but better evaluate the employment of those special operations forces to relieve some of that pressure. So mix all of that together with the wild card that there are. In every profession, in every walk of life, there are unscrupulous and evil people. So that mix that together, and you create these opportunities for some pretty egregious things to happen.
So, do you think that your personal opinion? Are there enough yellow flags up? Some of them are red relative to special forces community that you think that they merit more scrutiny?
I think they're going to self-police probably in more effective ways than the services writ large can do. And again, I think it's because of the size and the standards within those communities.
Self-policing. You know the self-policing thing though. That doesn't work so good. I mean, everybody watches that AFRICOM was allowed to investigate itself in that thing, and then then Secretary Mattis, throughout the letter of reprimand, it got labeled at a captain. When what, there was no colonels or generals in any chain that got briefed about response time of armed ISR or fixed-wing aircraft or helicopters and medevac capability? Everybody got stupid all of a sudden, and there's only a captain that's held responsible? So we watched this shit, and like, okay, so nobody's held accountable. At Paris Island, the Marine Corps did it. Gunny gets recommended 7 years, got 10, and not a commissioned officer went to the brig for shit. And so you watch this stuff, and you see the self-policing mechanism, and I would tell you, in my opinion, it doesn't work. And so to me, anybody who's worked with special operators knows the issues that they deal with. And they don't have to play by the rules because they don't have the scrutiny that everybody else has. And if Congress starts rock flipping in the special operations community, their faces are going to turn ashen with some of the shit they're going to find because of this lack of supervision. So I just wondered if I teed that up for you.
I don't disagree with you. Okay. I think, again, self-policing left to its own devices can certainly start to turn into a boilerplate.
Right.
Check the block. I think there's enough scrutiny on it now. That could serve as a check on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other factor here, though, again, you're right. Either service or department level investigations or a congressional inquiry that could flip a lot of rocks. I don't know that there's an appetite to flip those rocks.
I agree.
Again, because of the security blanket mentality of how these forces are being employed. In some cases, overemployed. So, you don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
Right.
you don't want to throw out your force of choice, or do something that could, impact their, ability to respond the next time you need them. But remember, it was special operations forces in the Iranian hostage crisis that unfortunately drove one of the causative factors behind defense reorganization and Goldwater-Nichols. So unfortunately, they are the most employed. They are probably the most relied upon at the national command level. So when something goes wrong, that can have exponential impact across the department, and perhaps it ought to. If these are in fact systemic problems that are even affecting the special operations community, should it surprise anybody to see similar issues going on again in those general purpose or conventional forces, whatever you want to call the rest of us?
Yeah, I'm not hating on them, but I can tell you from the my involvement in the post-traumatic winning stuff that I do, right? If you think that these guys are going to go home and not going to have to deal with the baggage that they have, right? And the reason why you have to protect them from becoming the things that we're reading about is that the suicide rate among special operators. Go check that out when you want to have some interesting reading, right? And so if your job as a leader is to keep them wrapped in the cloak of rightness and goodness that we go to bad places with, and once you get outside that cloak, right, to me there's a direct correlation between being outside that cloak and the suicide rate. It isn't that I just saw gross things, right? It's that my behavior, right, my behavior, I can't live with that behavior. Not just because I saw gross stuff, nasty stuff. So anyway,
no, it's not what you saw. It's not what you heard. It's what you did, or in many cases, what you didn't do.
Right.
You're spot on.
And how do you live with that? Next hot issue. All right, is this big hearing yesterday relative to military housing? You guys haven't written anything about it or anything that I've seen about it, but it's an ongoing topic that it seemingly plagues the military. And that you read these stories about mold and then going to, you know, whatever housing office and getting told, that's just the way it is and you don't have any recourse about it. Your thoughts on that as a consumer, as a Marine, essentially?
Well, first off, they're coming out in the March edition of the Gazette, so not available yet, but about to drop by the end of next week digitally. There are a couple articles in there from Marine Corps Installations Command talking very very conceptually, very high-mindedly about the new approach to installations as deployment and employment platforms. Every mission starts and ends at home. And that's all valid. I'm not knocking that approach at all. But frankly, for decades now, the Marine Corps has not had audio matching the video with regard to investment in the installations slice of our budget. In fact, installations, which includes housing, family housing and bachelor housing, installations as a portion of the Marine Corps' slice of the Department of the Navy budget, our Program Objective Memorandum, or POM, the slice of that for installations has been a bill payer for years now. Not surprising at all that there are shortfalls and real habitability problems with both family housing and bachelor housing. Oh, by the way, now it's become acute because of some of the damage done, particularly to Camp Lejeune and Pensacola area because of the last hurricane season. To the point where that has now and is now driving reallocation of resources into what is called the installations PEB, the Program Evaluation Board, that is the slice that deals with the installation budget. Being the service is essentially being forced to put money into a place where it had been taking money for again years, if not decades, everything that goes on an installation is important: training, maintenance. But where people live is probably one of the foundational activities that happens on that installation. There have been a number of initiatives over the years, public-private ventures with commercial builders. Being allowed to partner with Naval Facilities Command to actually build better family housing. That's certainly happened on a number of installations. Military construction budget to build barracks for bachelor Marines, single Marines. That's been to a degree a good news story on some installations. But overall, that piece of our budget has been the bank that we've had to go to in order to free up funds to pay other bills. And so expect it expected that there would be issues about that. And again, when it gets bad enough, then our elected officials will inevitably get involved.
Well, it was pretty bad yesterday when you heard the stories and the frustration of military spouses. In the poll that was cited yesterday, only 15% had a favorable opinion. Now, that is the methodology of the poll was that you went online and took the poll. So most of the time, only people that are dissatisfied tend to do that.
But
we all know that these issues have plagued the military for years. Wanted to get your thoughts on that. All right, let's talk about the February edition of the Gazette. Give me tell us what it's about and what are we talking about.
Well, as annually, February is the edition of the magazine that focuses on innovation and future war. So we've got a really kind of an innovation heavy edition. Starts out with a number of articles coming from the Marine Corps Warfighting Lab, which is the the lead agent in the Marine Corps for innovation across writ large, both what I'll call conceptual innovation, developing future operating concepts, that sort of thing. So the thinking side to innovation, but then also the technical side to it, the equipment and weapons innovation side. So that all sort of resides within. Within the warfighting lab. Starts out with a letter from their commanding general, Brigadier General Wortman, Christian Wortman.
Yeah.
And to a degree, his letter really sort of looks at what progress has been made over the last 2 to 3 years or so as a summary, and then sort of a direction for where we're going to be going in the near future. If I was going to recommend a couple of articles, I would strongly recommend article that the primary author is Lieutenant Colonel retired Don Berry, Forward to a New Naval Future. This is, I think, the best single document, the best single article that describes our vision for future naval operations. There are a number of others in there that talk about it as well. But I think this one is, if you're going to read one article, one essay that talks to a joint or a department level vision. So this is not a Marine pure view, which it can't be when we talk about naval operations. It has to have Navy input as well, and so that's incorporated into that article. So I strongly recommend that one. Not surprisingly, given the direction for national defense strategy, are refocusing onto major power conflict, near peer or peer competitors. Much of this innovation theme is dedicated towards naval and expeditionary operations. So looking at our instead of getting back to our roots, but the roots aren't necessarily there anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say we don't have any roots. I mean, the Navy wants to give the amphibs away.
Exactly.
How are we in business?
So
second land army.
So coming to terms with that, in the tradition of the Gazette, we have a debate, not a party line, so to speak, but a debate. I would also encourage folks to get on our new and improved website.
Let me make a plug for that. So I bombed in there today. I was like, whoa, No wonder Woody has been out of communication with me, right? He's been working. He's been designing his website. So I just have to tell you, if you haven't seen it, you need to go check it out. It's got a lot more stuff that I use on a regular basis up front and kind of in your face. And I was very impressed with it. Well done.
And I'll tell you, there's an article, again, if you look at the Forward to a New Naval Future article,
right.
Look at another article by Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Lauer called Dan the Torpedoes. Again, another approach. There's an article about closing seams in naval integration. So an awful lot of that is heavily focused on our partnership with the Navy and how the Navy is the not even the critical enabler. They're the only enabler for amphibious operations. Approaching the future from that regard is in a lot of ways, again, this get back to basics, get back to our roots, get back to what we've always done,
yeah.
Which may be missing an opportunity when you talk about true innovation and modernizing the force of what sort of an opportunity are we missing to become the expeditionary force that the National Defense Strategy and the National Security Strategy tell us we need to be. Article to read then is online.
Which is not amphibious.
Correct. Exactly. And so if you the title of the article is Not Yet Openly at War, But Still Mostly at Peace, Exploiting the Opportunity to Become the 21st Century Force That Our Nation Needs.
Right.
It's a group of authors, names you'll recognize, Scott Cuomo, Lieutenant Colonel Captain Olivia Gerard, Lieutenant Colonel School Spataro, Major Jeff Cummings, who's on the staff of Expeditionary Warfare School.
Right.
So, a group of authors who had originally published a family of related essays out on the web in War on the Rocks, took those essays and worked them together into one coherent piece that makes the argument that it's not really back to the future. That's not what we're being asked to do. Where the service is not being told, hey, get back to your amphibious roots. We're being told to innovate and to adapt to a new future. And part of that new future is limited amphibious platforms. So what next?
Increased lethality of modern naval, naval weaponry.
Yes.
So when you put an organization aboard shipping, you have to be able to dominate because those assets are so precious. If you can't guarantee their arrival, then we got to find a different. There's got to be a different way. The over the horizon thing, all the rest of that stuff. So go back. Where do they find that? That set of articles. Where is that?
So the articles from the Warfighting Lab are in the print edition and in this month's edition, which you'll see displayed prominently on the left side of the Gazette page.
Got
immediately
it.
adjacent to that to the right, you've got a little call to action block there that says Web Extras. When you click on that, you're going to find our Web Extra articles, and right near the top of that list, I think second one down, is the article by Lieutenant Colonel Cuomo et al. That I was just talking about. So, I'm not suggesting read one and not the others. Read them both,
because it's
an argument forming. The decision, really, for the service is, what direction do we go, and is that direction really going to answer what we're essentially being told to do by the National Defense Strategy?
Got it. You'll find the link to that article in this post. So if you're listening to this and you want to read the article that's entitled Not Yet Openly at War, But Still Mostly at Peace, Scott Cuomo et al. You'll find that the link to it. And then I would suggest to you that while you're checking it out, you might want to go ahead and explore the rest of that stuff because it's all interesting stuff. I've got an email for you here, Woody. Mac, yesterday you were talking to Jeff Kenney and Tim Lynch about, do you know both of them?
I certainly do. I may actually owe them money. I'm not sure.
But. I was going to say, you might want to choose your friends a little bit more carefully. But yeah, anyway.
That's a Motley Crue.
There you go. You were talking to them about what you called a crisis of leadership in mid-level leadership in the Marine Corps. And that is not holding people accountable, that the young Marines were essentially what you called blank canvas, but the Marines just ahead of them that now occupy mid-level management came from the same kind of timeout corner rearing that you, on a routine basis, backhand as nonsensical, that they are adverse to the enforcement of rules, and worse yet, are now scared because anytime somebody yells hazing, everybody runs at the peril of their own career. I'd be curious if Woody has any thoughts about that circuitous little web that I just wove. So are you with me, Woody? So
I think I'm tracking, and you know what I think that sort of comes down to is the Marine Corps is like it's like a living thing, and it's got a bloodstream, and the bloodstream is sort of in some ways it's like the promotion process. You know, there are cells that move through that bloodstream, and eventually they get to the heart and to the brain. You know, and that's as Marines are promoted, they move to the position where they really influence the hearts and minds of the organization as a whole. And I think what the author of that email is kind of getting to is, you know, what happens when there's a bubble in the bloodstream, you know?
Isn't that called an aneurysm?
Aneurysm, embolism, I know it's not a good thing. When it hits the heart or the lungs or the brain, bad things happen. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is we reap what we sow. When you create this environment that is avert to what I'll call the hard enforcement of rules and maintenance of standards, averse to that for whatever reason, whether it be fear of some kind of negative action or whether it's just pure laziness and an idea that, you know, boys will be boys, let's move on and concentrate on doing our, you know, just be good at doing your job, don't worry about the other stuff, sort of the 9-to-5 mentality. If that's the environment that people are being promoted out of, you're going to have those problems. I don't know that there's a way around that, right, short of changing the environment up front.
Has the Marine Corps overreacted to the whole Marines United hazing thing? Because let me tell you, if hazing is me calling you, hey, blockhead, come here, for Sergeant, Lieutenant McNamara just hazed me. What did he do? He called me blockhead. Well, Woody, have you looked in the mirror? Have you looked at your head? It is kind of a square. Right? I mean, so I don't know that in a court of law that he couldn't defend that in terms of libel, because in case you don't know it, truth is defense and libel, you do have kind of a blockhead. You know, I mean, are we there? Right? And so when you do something wrong, I don't have any tools other than I now assign you in the operating forces an essay. Are you shitting me? That's where we are relative to the day-to-day operation of the units in the Marine Corps. I mean, and you hear that, and nobody's arguing to go back to punching people and all that kind of stuff, but we haven't done that really in the Marine Corps, you know, in decades, truth be told. But now what you're getting to is, are the inmates, right, have they gained such a foothold in the asylum where our mid-level leaders say fuck it, as opposed to saying, hey, come here, do you see that says no parking here because it's a fire lane? Well, but everybody parks here, Staff Sergeant. And so the staff sergeant just walks away. I don't want to deal with it because it's not worth my time.
Not only is it not worth his time, but there may be perceptions that, if I really push this issue,
it's going to come back on
me.
I'm
going to be the subject of some sort of investigation or complaint or what have you.
Okay, so the blunt question is the Marine Corps there yet? I say yes. You're there.
If a part of the Marine Corps is there, then the whole Marine Corps is there. So I would agree. I think it really has to be, I think part of this is so many Marines are left to, sort of interpret things on their own. I read this, I was told that, but I heard this. And so they jump to their own conclusions about what is and isn't acceptable. And ultimately it is a leadership issue at a pretty small or lower level unit level to clear the air on that and set the rumble strips. And if commanders don't do that anywhere, then it affects the organization as a whole. Because those Marines do, some of them a portion, maybe a third or less, quote unquote, grow up and then become the leadership.
Right.
I think it is a systemic problem.
Right. All right. Interesting email. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to point out you've got a couple of other articles in the February edition, not innovation related, but that talk to these sorts of problems in the leadership section. And two that I'll point out to you. There's two by the same author, Major Daniel Walker, who is a student here around Quantico right now. But almost taking two sides to the same issue, and it relates to where and how our leaders are promoted. So the first one is called performance separation boards. So as a counterpoint to promotion boards, the author's advocating that we should in fact have performance separation boards for substandard Marines, particularly substandard officers and leaders. There's a lot of truth in that argument of again, what do we do to actually separate out the people who aren't getting it, who are substandard performance, particularly as leaders and officers. We focus a lot on promoting the good ones, but what do we do to relieve ourselves of the bad ones?
To me, somebody going to the brig would be a good thing. I watched Gerald Mattis. I watched the 1st Marine Division perform at a pretty high level in 2004 in the Al-Anbar province of Iraq when a course of action that I don't know that the division rightly anticipated exploded in its face. We went there with green uniforms because we anticipated a brief period of time that, we would have to get to know the AO. But then we anticipated, we come in peace. Like the Marines that went to Beirut. We came in peace. We're gonna switch to greens. So we're gonna hand out soccer balls to show them we don't need to be camouflaged here. That's not what we're doing here. We don't intend to come here to be kinetic. But it performed at a pretty high level. And I, by hook or crook, mostly by crook, became General Mattis' staff sec. And I got to watch him scare the shit out of the mediocre leaders in the 1st Marine Division, or units that came to the 1st Marine Division to work, and they were terrified of the following words. Chaos is Oscar Mike to your paws at the time. Right? Grown men, literally, right. Emotional reactions to that, because they knew that he would fire their asses. Now, I never had really, my leadership style is more personal than General Mattis's. But I'll tell you what, I took notes. I took notes, and I thought, no attrition, no morale. What that really means is you got to smoke the shitheads in order for the institution at large to thrive. And if people see you not doing that, it's demoralizing. And to have the second in charge and the idiot out of the way is always better, is what I found. And so I found that really interesting. And I mean, if you look at the case in Parris Island, neither the regimental commander nor the battalion commander, right, it's, in my opinion, held accountable. The battalion commander had a $2,000 fine or something for 2 months, and he's going to be allowed to retire pending a BOI to see whether he will retire as a lieutenant colonel or as major. It was he, and then the company commander, not even mentioned, that allowed a guy who was currently under investigation to work in his battalion with allegations of hazing already hanging over him. That guy, the gunny, he got 7 years recommended, but the board gave him 10. Right, so enlisted justice is one thing. Officer justice, well, we send one of those son of a bitches to send them all to the brig for 30 days to 90 days. You want to get everybody's attention? I am so frustrated with that double standard relative to justice. And we learn at OCS, right, Woody? Everything your unit does and fails to do, but that doesn't apply when we go to court martial. The officers get a different standard. That's just me.
You know, I would comment, I think there ought to be a different standard. I think there ought to be a higher and more stringent standard for officers.
Not a lower one, right?
And with that comes, higher degrees of loss. In other words, potential punishment.
Right.
More can and in some cases ought to be more severe. A former mentor of mine, I won't quote him directly, but there's a very positive effect to the occasional public execution.
Right.
And I think he was speaking
euphemistically, of course,
Well, you know, it is, and there's a, you have to kind of try to balance that against what I call the, you know, the lurid factor, the car crash,
right,
rubbernecker factor.
But you and I both know.
You know, oh, so-and-so got relieved, and their pictures on the front page of Marine Times and all that. That's not what we're talking about.
No.
You know, we're talking about what, when there's criminal misconduct, what really happens.
Yeah, and people being held accountable like we say we're going to hold them accountable, and it just doesn't it doesn't happen. Well, Mac, if you knew all the facts, you would know. No, what about everything your unit does or fails to do? And most of the time when you see these things happen, this is my experience, and you can pile on, Woody, if you care to, but most of the time, this is not one and out, okay? This is the fifth, sixth incident in a string of incidents that this person, because it's a way of life by the time you got to there. You made this mistake, and then you made this mistake, you ignored this, and all you got to do is look at the Fitzgerald, and you have to look at the McCain. The shit shows that went on those vessels started months before that, and it starts, and then you hear all the excuses. Oh, a 100-hour work week. Woody, that's 14 hours a day. That means you got 10 hours off. Would you have signed up for that on any deployment? I'll answer that for you, yes.
Yep.
Oh, our systems were degraded. Well, no shit. That's what happens to them. What do you do when your systems are degraded? Do you cross a major shipping lane at 20 knots with no operational CIC and degraded radars? I'm not surface warfare qualified, but I'll say this. No. I mean, it's stupid shit. And then you see it up on Capitol Hill, and they're like, oh, 100-hour work week. Hey, can you get a Marine that's deployed in any time in the last 17 years that wasn't sleeping in sheets, that wasn't eating six meals a day in the chow hall, right, aboard a ship, and ask them if they would sign up for 14-hour work days? And the answer is yes. And so, and again, all these officers, they're all victims of the Navy. They're all victims. None of them is responsible, so... I don't feel too strong.
It often seems that the officers don't really suffer the same punishments. That almost ending your career, quote unquote, is punishment enough.
Yes, that's it. Right.
Often means you could have six months to a couple of years left on active duty, drawing a paycheck. All you know for sure is that you're never getting promoted again. That quote unquote ended your career, as opposed to a punitive discharge, as opposed to any sort of loss of liberty, you know, you have to do something really egregious. You have to be a, you know, murderer, rapist, molester, et cetera, right. before those sorts of things kick in.
But the gunny, he got his career ended, but that wasn't good enough. He went to the brig. Right. Right, so to me, it's this difference that always, and again, you want to see a lot of mediocre guys pay attention and straighten up, send somebody to the brig for poor performance. And I don't care, send them to the brig for 30 days, but hold them accountable the way we say we would. Hold on, here's an email. Mac, you're a malcontent, and now you're trying to drag Woody down that hole. Leave him alone. Stop it. I'm not a malcontent. I'm not a fan. Yeah, whoa, telling the truth now makes me a malcontent, right? Yeah, in the words of Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. Shut up. Quit emailing me. All right, what haven't I asked? This is the general article. What haven't I asked you about this month's Gazette or anything coming up that you want to make sure that you get out to everybody?
Let's see, couple things with regard to February. I'd also encourage folks to read the article "Third Squad Lima 3-3 in 2033." So it's a look at future war innovation. Authors are Colonel Matt Rao, who's an exceptional writer. I gotta give him some credit there.
Oh my God.
Gunnar Craig Marshall. They partnered to write a view of future war from the infantry squad level, and so that's a great think piece on our, you know, the results of where our modernization efforts may be going.
Wow.
So I throw that out there for the February edition. The other thing that I'd like folks to you know, keep in mind is, during March, we're going to be launching. Well, actually, let me back up. So we talked about our new and improved website. One of the other features on that, again, it's in the same block of web extras. In there, you'll find a number of features. One of those, I had mentioned the oral history podcasts on a previous show.
Yeah.
That's where you'll find those. And for Marines, those are now also available on MarineNet. So you can get to them from a McSend workstation, your work computer. Those are available there as well. But also, you've got a Gazette forum section there. So any reader, anyone can comment on any of the articles that they've read.
All right, who approves the comments? Okay, because let me just tell you, Mike Musselman and I would say that the comment section of anything on the internet is the road to hell. It is the invitation and the rational argument for the extinction of the planet. Because it's so
horrible. These are curated comments.
Okay.
And so, you know, anything that is clearly out of line, you know, there's no room for personal attacks, for anything that's crossing the line, we're going to pull those comments out.
Okay.
But constructive criticism, and it can be very critical, is
I call that destructive criticism, and I'm not afraid to go there, just for the record.
Yeah, no destructive criticism.
What? I like destructive criticism, but as long as it's articulate, is that a destructive criticism? Not personal, but just destroying somebody's argument because it's stupid. Is that wrong?
Oh, not at all. Okay. If it is, in fact, a spurious argument, if it's not backed up with facts.
Got it. No, always backed up with facts, Woody. Always.
Yeah.
All right.
And remember, facts are not facts just because somebody says so. There has to be some form of corroborating evidence there.
That was, that was actually a relatively deep statement, Woody. Well done.
I know. And it's topical as well. The other feature that will be coming in March is a reestablished Gazette blog. So right now, if you click on that blog on our website, it basically says coming soon. But we're in the process of building that, putting that together right now, and it's going to start as a really as a Warriors book club. So there'll be a call to action every few weeks. A leader, senior leader, general officer, someone will nominate a book and say, hey, take the next couple weeks, take a week, read this book, and then we're going to post a kind of a base review of that and build a thread of people commenting about the book and commenting about that review. And so that'll start in March, and I anticipate that we'll grow that to a discussion forum that goes beyond professional reading as well.
Got it. There's a cool picture on the Gazette blog page of, like, all these different battle colors. Do you know where that was taken?
I think that may have been out of the barracks at 8th and 9th.
All right. There's a lot of battle colors there. There's some Navy ones in there too. So interesting. All right. What else? What else haven't I asked you?
Let's see. What else? What else is new? Well, we're about to send. Just as we had a group out on the West Coast last week, again doing one of our professional dinners and a series of PME sessions around right. OneMeth. We've got a team going out to Okinawa here next week for 3MeF. So General Smith, Eric Smith, has invited us out there, and we're going to be showing the flag, if you will, with our forces on Okinawa. Also bringing in some of the Marines from Marine Forces Korea and Combined Forces Command as well.
How do you fly to Okinawa commercial as a civilian? Do you? How do you do it?
It's a commercial. Yeah, for us, it's a commercial flight.
All right. So, what do you fly into Tokyo and then down to Okinawa?
It depends. Usually Narita, and then a connector down to Okinawa. There aren't a lot of direct flights from here, from the East Coast, into Okinawa. And that's a long flight when you're back in steerage.
Exactly, with the hey, son, get that chicken tied up.
Yeah. When someone gets on with a duck of carry-on luggage, then you know you're.
There you go. When Ellie Mae and Jed get on, you know you're in trouble. When you're back there in steerage, and then they start serving booze, it only gets worse. All right. Woody, first of all, thanks for the visit today. I appreciate you your opinions. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in the military right now as this transition occurs, as this constant wave of innovation in the form of new technology. It's been kind of overdue in the military because we've been so focused on wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and kind of focused on that you know, big war has kind of been off the radar, and now innovations that have been long in the making are happening, and so thanks for coming on and making us smart about some of that and offering your opinions on that.
You bet. And the one thing I'd leave as a parting shot, since you had Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny on, is, you know, very very close to their experiences in the midst of this modernization and focused on you know, peer competitors, et cetera, we can't lose sight of you know, hard lessons learned and our capabilities in you know, wars among the people, the irregular or counterinsurgent ends of the conflict spectrum, because those are going to present themselves again too.
Well, you know, I saw something written the other day about this kind of either or proposition that people tend to make, and the point was this. It's not an either or proposition. This war on organizations that promote terror around the world will be a constant background theme of anything that we do in the United States military. Because guarantee this, if you take your eye off it, they will kick your head in. And that's the way.
That's exactly right.
That's the way they've done it in Iraq. And then again, especially in Iraq, I thought in Iraq they were absolutely. I told a story of a PFC on Route Michigan in Ramadi in 2005 with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. They're on top of a four-story building between Hurricane Point and the Governance Center. So down the first kind of stretch leg of Michigan as it goes through Ramadi, as you're moving kind of west to east from kind of the border to Baghdad, if you will. So you're coming that direction, and you're headed down Michigan. The building's on the right-hand side. tactically situated to see the whole stretch. They come under fire on the fourth, on the top floor is the fourth floor. They come under fire from the right. RPGs, right? Machine guns and small arms fire. Blah, 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 blah. Marines score up. They begin to return fire. From the left down Michigan is a white opal, the proverbial white opal, and it pulls into the entrance and it detonates. Right at the entrance.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody killed, but right, shit everywhere. Everybody knocked down by the power of what? Half a dozen, 152, 122 rounds in the back of an opal. PFC stands up and he's looking through the smoke now, looking to his left as they continue to receive fire to the right, and he sees a large container truck coming through the smoke. He knows, oh shit, here it comes. He engages the windshield of the vehicle and kills the driver, who lays off the death switch, and the vehicle goes up. Pfft, knocks over two buildings adjacent, left and right, you know, like dominoes. And so you see those kind of things, and you're like, holy smokes, right? But that's how good at maneuver warfare, in my opinion, that they were in Iraq. How well they thought it through. There was a distractor, there was a dilemma, and if you didn't have your head on a swivel, they would cut it off. And so that to me is what is the challenge that is faced by the nation as it attempts to skew towards the Pacific.
Right?
And Russia.
It would be great if we could focus exclusively on one thing to the exclusion of something else.
Not an either or proposition. Which makes it hard.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's not either or, it's and but. And that's a tough gray area reality that we live in.
Got it. All right, sir. Thanks for the visit, Woody. I'll talk to you.
You bet. Take care, Matt. Talk to you soon.
There you have it. Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps type, and he the editor and publisher of the Gazette, and the publisher of Leather Neck magazine. We'll take a break. When we come back, Michael Musselman here on I think he's supposed to go get his Botox shots today, but normally he does that early and then he's back home, but I'm not sure. So we'll see. More of a, he's here. Yeah, I just saw the little Skype indicator pop up. That means the gunner standing by. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.